Oh, okay. Well, the talk tonight, session tonight is presented by Oliver Bond, who's going to talk about monarchy, feudal relic, or capitalist figurehead. Over to you, Oliver.
Okay, thank you, Howard. Okay, hope you all enjoyed your extra day off here for the. For anyone working on the list, hope you enjoyed your day off for. It was a wonderful weekend. I thought you're all proud to be British. I made you proud to be British. But anyway, just first of all, I might say a little bit about, before we get on to the main subject, let's talk about the jubilees we've had in the past, just briefly. The history of the jubilees. Anyway, jubilees is something where the monarch celebrates the life. It also gives them legitimacy. And the idea is that they supposedly connect with the people. It also gives opportunity for a festival to assert our common bonds as British citizens, whether you're rich or poor or capitalist or worker. So like a festival of patriotism and nationalism. But as far as I'm aware, the first, one of the first jubilee was from George III in 1809, the beginning of his 50th reign. It's like all jubilees, you know, it's sort of celebration of banquets, religious service, so forth. Queen Victoria was the next one, but she didn't have a, she didn't celebrate her 25th 25th anniversary, the silver. She didn't have a silver one because she was still mourning the death of her husband, Prince Albert. But she had one on the 50 years later. She had the golden one and a jubilee one. So in 1897, she had a jubilee, and 10 years later, she won the diamond one. Okay. Of course, it's a bit similar to Julie said now, celebrating Britain's, she was very much celebrating Britain's imperial status. Spent a lot of time meeting with leaders from the British Empire colonies. Gave her an opportunity to present herself as the mother of the British Empire. So it certainly gave a sort of more cozier view to the sky's real relationship to the British Empire, but not one of an exploitation woman, but more, she's more of a maternal or paternal or case maternal view of British rule in the empire. The one that may be interested for socialists is what is a jubilee of King George V in 1935. That'd be more interesting for us in the sense that got hold of a Daily Worker article from the 22nd of May 1935. Remember, this is time of when it civil jubilee took place, time of the Great Depression, so it's mass unemployment, mass poverty. Of course, it didn't go unnoticed for a lot of people at that time. In fact, there were protests. Daily Worker put out an article saying, contrasted 5,000, there was part of this, sorry, first of all, I say, part of this jubilee was a banquet at the Guildhall, the big banquet. Apparently, according to the Daily Worker at that time, £5,000 was spent on their prices those days, was spent on this banquet. That contrasted that with 10 old pence that an unemployed family had to survive on each day. In fact, some protester, before the night of the jubilee, somebody placed a meal of kind of meal an unemployed family would eat, you know, a very basic meal on the steps of Guildhall as a protest. In fact, the demonstrations were organized outside the Guildhall that night. There were also rallies and protests. That takes us up, Lord, to present monarch. We had a civil jubilee in 1977. Again, it took place at a time of economic crisis. A lot of people question whether it's wise to have 7% time as well as being high unemployment. There is a growing nationalism is growing in Scotland and Wales. And there's also had started troubles in Northern Ireland. Troubles were conflict in Northern Ireland was blazing at that time. During this Jubilee, the Queen visited all common Commonwealth countries, of which she was head of state, like Canada, Australia, New Zealand. So. But she also made a trip, despite the conflict in Northern Ireland, she did make a trip there just to show, not solidarity, but show that she cared for all the citizens of the empire. Of course, yeah. Same time, you had street parties all the place, the usual. And so a lot of people opposed to it. And the stuff the Jubilee parties as well. Of course, then we had the 2002, we had the Golden Jubilee. And then again, there was a bit of a change of emphasis. Queen tried to modernize it. It had a pop, organize a pop concert in the grounds. Party of the Palace, it's called. And it tended to be more community-based focused events. So then also, again, 10 years later, the Diamond Jubilee, and then we've got this one. So the emphasis is, you know, trying to promote a modern image. And so I promote the idea that the Commonwealth promotes that there's a community between all the former imperial parts of the British Empire. But that deals with Jubilees. I'll attempt to answer the question, which is posed: is she a feudal, the British monarchy a feudal relic, or is it a capitalist figurehead? Okay, I'll just give a real brief history. I've got to emphasize, I'm not an expert, historical expert in the monarchy, but I'll try and what I found to give a brief effort. What's the origin? Well, the present monarchy, what we've got now, as I understand, probably originates from the day of the Mormon invasion of 1066 from William the Conqueror. Because he had kings and queens before that, but they were sort of local kingdoms. Because after the William Conqueror, but England anyway, became one feudal kingdom. So the monarchy had its origins in feudals. The present form of the monarchy had probably did have their origins in the feudal system. Of course, as we all know here, the kings and queens are not part of the natural order of things. It's not the natural order of human society because there were 1,000 years under primitive conquest. There's no monarchy, no kings or queens. They represent, of course, the advent of private property. Where a minority class, where a minority of population have to appropriate all the produce and dispossess the majority of the class. So some of them, of course, these separate classes develop what we now call the aristocracy. And then one of the top of the classes would be the king or the queen. So we have very much part of private property society, it's not any sort of natural human development. The history of the monarchy, because the monarchy being part of the sort of head of the aristocracy. This is top of the apex of the class system and the feudalism. Now, during the 17th century, we had the English Civil War and an attempt to to get rid of the monarchy and introduce a republic. We had a republic, more or less the revolution in that sense failed. It didn't remove the aristocracy. Probably a couple of reasons for this is that claimed by some of the left anyway that Oliver Cromwell feared the sort of open democracy that the levelers and the diggers are promoting, and it's probably more interested in suppressing them than the aristocracy. Also, I think another reason I give is that aristocracy had built up through its military prowess to build up the British Empire, which is useful to the emerging capitalist class. And since they became like partners, they didn't want to lose their expertise, as it were. I mean, or maybe that's what I think anyway. But it just gets on to the next bit. Why? Because we know that British monarchy is not. We know the British monarchy is somebody like a figurehead, somebody head of state. Of course, what people don't realize, maybe not fully aware of the past of the monarchy, is that it's fairly heavily involved both in colonialism and slavery. Of course, you can see these are the main sort of drivers of capitalism, the main sort of genesis of capitalism. But that's back in 1532, Henry VIII declared England as an empire in his bid to split from Rome. Elizabeth I granted a royal charter to Sir John Hawkins. He was a naval commander, and he was a sort of promoter of slavery from the slave trade. From African slave trade. So it's really, she gave him the go ahead to go in Africa and bring slaves over, capture slaves and bring them over to Africa. She also granted a charter to the British East India Company in 1600. So that paved a way for British merchants to go in and run India, to run and exploit India. And then Charles II, he formed in 1660, Charles II formed the Royal African Company. Again, this is part of the slave trade. At the time, it was led by Duke of York, who became James II. As well, of course, extracted gold and ivory from the Gold Coast, but also transported about 3,000 Africans to Barbados. In fact, many of them had the initial DY burned into their skin, signifying that they belonged to the Duke of York. Many of the palaces were probably built with the money from the slave trade. But that's a moral question, but it's also a question that showed you how involved the monarchy was in developing capitalism, being capitalism as it is today. In 1947, just to illustrate how the monarchy was tied up with empire, President Queen, who was then a princess, Princess Elizabeth, she, in 1947, when she was touring South Africa, she made a speech where she said, she declared she would devote her life to service of our great imperial family, to which we all belong. So the way she talks to her family is an imperial family. So very clear connection between the royal family and the empire. But there's also, suggested other ways that British monarchy, on the other hand, originally contributed to the development of capitalism. I'll pick three events in history. We go back to 1536, the time of King VIII. It's the time of what it's called the dissolution of the monasteries. At that time, King Henry VIII had taken over and closed down many monasteries which were previously owned by the church in Rome. After he seized their lands and buildings and sold them off to families who were sympathetic with his aims. Of course, this enabled the gentry and the rich merchants who became the embryonic capitalist class to come to prosper and increase their wealth. And then we had the glorious revolution. In 1688, there was a glorious revolution. King William and Queen Mary, after they signed the Declaration of Rights, which became the Bill of Rights, which meant right of regular parliaments, free speech, because also forbade the monarchy from being Catholic, forbade Catholics from becoming the monarchy. But they increased the power of parliament, and they also paved the way for what we now know as constitutional monarchy. So it limited the monarchy, so it kept created conditions for the modern capitalist state that we have today. I just wonder, the other event was the, maybe not obvious, the Battle of Culloden in 1746, which is a culmination of the Jacobite Rising, 1745. This is where the Stuart King, Bonnie Prince Charles Stuart, tried to reclaim the British crown for his family, Stuart clan, away from King George IV of Hanover. He attempted an invasion of England, first of Scotland, and gathered a force of mainly Highlanders. They tried to invade England, but they pushed back. Then the final battle was in Culloden in 1746, with the government forces under the control of, led by George I, defeated the Highlanders decisively. Of course, historically, it's always seen as defeat of the Stuart line over the Hanover line, which it was. But it also went deeper than that. It was also the destruction of the crofter system in the Highlands, the sort of the clan system, crofter system, which is like a relic from the pre-capitalism, for the capitalist system. Of course, destroying the crofter system, of course, it paved way for capitalist exploitation in the Highlands. So essentially, it advanced the capitalist cause in Britain as a whole. It would have paved way for the Highland clearances, which took place a few years later. So what I argue from those events, it seems that far from a family stuck in feudalism, a reactionary family stuck in feudalism, it helped play its part in paving the way for capitalism. And in the process, I would say, transforms itself from a capitalist feudal institution to a capitalist one, albeit with some feudalistic manners. Probably explains, I think, why, unlike other countries, the British monarchy survived into the modern world. It didn't just adapt to capitalism, but actually helped it come about. Okay. So in my view, that's why people say, you know, it's just a relic from feudalism that Britain needs to modernize. We're getting it appears that way. Some of the cultures are hanging off from feudalism, but they're much a capitalist system. They still make the money from. Well, Queen's got her own private investments, so which she keeps secret, so you don't know about it. Of course, they've got the crown estates. Oh, they don't control them, but unless they get income from that, indirectly by the government. But although I'd say they're probably more than a figure. If you say the figure, because queen as a head of state, she does have real powers. I mean, like any head of state, she can dissolve governments, she can sack prime ministers, so forth. But I argue he's not really of interest to us. She obviously has got the power to stop the socialist revolution, but although a lot of people like the Republic and all the anti-monarchists put this view as undemocratic, another head of state has got these powers, I'd say it's not interest to us or the working class. If we got rid of the monarchy today, if we established a republic with an elected head of state, that wouldn't make any material difference to how we live. I mean, still have, most people still have to work for a wage, you still have employment, you still have the big corporations, you still have Amazon and so forth. So I wouldn't change anything. So some argument that, I've heard an argument from public, though it would help socialism if you got rid of the Queen because that would modernise the state. Britain's monarchy is Britain backward. If you got elected, I said, no, Britain could move forward. That helps socialism. Well, it's got a cultural argument to that, but it's not really, it sounds convincing, but it's not, if you look at evidence, it's not that convincing. I mean, look at a country like the United States or France or Germany, who are republics, but there's no evidence that they're any nearer to socialism. And Britain is, in fact, we got somewhere like the United States where some of the states are banning abortion, seems to be going backwards. So it's not really it's not an interest of the working class to specifically get rid of the monarchy. What we need, working class need to do is get rid of capitalism itself, get rid of it. The capital wage slave relationship. Do that globally. And bring about socialism. But anyway, that's all I've got for now. Anyway, okay, thank you very much for listening.